All right, we're speaking with Nandita Sharma, who is the author of Home Economics, Nationalism, and the Making of Migrant Workers in Canada. Welcome to the show, Nandita.
Thanks for inviting me.
So we'll be talking with other women on the show about the dangers that anti-trafficking discourse and laws actually create for migrant women doing sex work. As you yourself have acknowledged on a previous edition of No One Is Legal Radio, most trafficking discourse of the government and the media focuses mainly on sex work. Could you speak about the use of moral panics and the idea of sex slavery, quote unquote, and the consequences that this creates for migrant women who are doing sex work?
Yeah, the moral panic against sex work is definitely what is fueling the push for anti-trafficking legislation, without a doubt. Most people who are pushing the anti-trafficking legislation are also the same people who want to eliminate the option for women to enter into sex work. And the way that they want to do that is to further criminalize sex work activity and to criminalize especially the entry of migrant women into the sex industry, for example, in Canada. And the way they do that is to make the migration of women into sex work even more scrutinized by the state. So, you know, now we have not only police who continuously raid sex work establishments like strip clubs, massage parlors, etc., under the guise of, you know, protecting the public morality or public health. Now we also have immigration police who are raiding sex work establishments looking for so-called victims of trafficking. Now, of course, you know, the vast majority of women who migrate do not enter into sex work. But, you know, for those women who do enter into sex work, the greatest vulnerability that they face is their status in the country. Most women who, migrant women who are engaged in sex work are made vulnerable by their lack of a legal or a permanent status. Many women engaged as, you know, who are migrants in the sex industry are forced to be in the sex industry either on temporary work visas, which we know over the last many years has been squashed by the government, or they are forced to work in, you know, in a status of illegality because it's impossible to get into Canada as a sex work legally. You don't get points for being in the sex industry. You're not going to be given permanent residency status as a sex worker. So the anti-trafficking legislation is another way to attack women's ability to be in the sex industry, and it does so in a way that further legitimizes the idea that no woman should ever be engaged in the sex industry, that it is inherently evil, it is inherently a worse occupation than any other job in the country. So anti-trafficking legislation, I think, absolutely depends on this kind of dominant view that women must be prevented from entering the sex industry.
All right, and my next question is, much of your writing is on the functioning of global apartheid. Could you address what anti-trafficking legislation fails to address in terms of women's rights and women's agency in general? In answering this, could you also address what you see as the root causes behind what is called trafficking more generally?
Well, the key issue is to understand why over the last decade, national governments around the world have been pushed to pass anti-trafficking legislation. What is going on that allows states to feel that there is something, you know, that there's some kind of major problem that needs to be addressed? And I think that problem is that there is increased migration in the world today, largely resulting from practices of dispossession, displacement, creating political crises in people's lives through war, and so on. And yet, at the same time that there's increased migration, most national states, especially in the so-called first world, have implemented increasingly restrictive policies that prevent more and more people from ever entering these states legally. So the result is predictably that more and more people are going to enter national states, especially those in the first world, as so-called illegals. The problem then is that anti-trafficking legislation is targeted at this so-called illegal migration. But instead of placing the blame on the restrictive immigration policies of national states that force people into a condition of illegality, it blames those who are actually facilitating their movement across borders. In today's world, it is next to impossible to enter into a first world national state without someone's help. It's impossible to simply get on a plane and, you know, get on a boat, get into a car, walk across a border without some kind of official identity papers, without some kind of forged visa or forged passport, without someone helping you across that border. It's very, very difficult to do it by yourself. So for many of the world's migrants, the urgent need is to actually provide them with assistance in their movement. And instead of doing that, anti-trafficking legislation criminalizes those people who are going to facilitate people's entry into especially first world national states. And I think that that is ultimately the underlying agenda behind anti-trafficking legislation. It gives ideological cover by legitimating the border policing by immigration departments in the first world.
All right. Next, could you explain how it's possible to simultaneously fight the actual exploitation of women that takes place in terms of sex work, which does happen sometimes, and could you explain how it's possible to fight this without resorting to anti-feminist hysteria about all women engaged in sex work as victims of trafficking and of sex work in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, we need to take our cue from sex workers themselves. And sex worker organizations are very clear on the steps needed to ensure, safe, dignified, decent working conditions for women in the sex industry. And top of the list, of course, is decriminalization. We really must push for the decriminalization of sex work. And the anti-trafficking agenda moves in exactly the opposite direction. The anti-trafficking agenda actually further criminalizes sex work by targeting those people, especially in the case of migrants, who are facilitating women's entry into sex work. So the hysteria comes into play when you say, I mean, basically the fundamental disagreement here between, those who want to end sex work in part through anti-trafficking legislation and those who want to make sex work safer for women, the fundamental disagreement is whether women have the right to engage in sex work or not. Most people in the anti-trafficking camp believe that there is no possible way that women can ever engage in sex work without being fundamentally exploited. And I disagree with that, and most sex workers' organizations disagree with that as well. Most sex workers' organizations point out that sex work can be made safer, can be made more dignified, and the way that we're going to do that is to stop demonizing those who are engaged in it. So how to make it safer? Decriminalize it, provide, union organizing within the sex industry, as, you know, many sex workers organizations have attempted, whether that's in India or Bangladesh or San Francisco, and to really bring sex work into our understanding of, you know, the options that are available to women in a capitalist economy. You know, in a capitalist economy, we need to work. And sex work is a viable option for many women that must be made safer instead of being criminalized. Ultimately, of course, if we want to end the exploitation of women, we need to challenge the capitalist system, which ultimately is the basis for all of our exploitation, whether we're working in the sex industry or we're working in a restaurant or we're working in a university, we're being exploited by those who are benefiting from our labor. So if we want to end exploitation, we don't give more power to the state to criminalize workers. We give more power to workers to end their exploitation. Oftentimes, you know, those of us who are critical of the anti-trafficking rhetoric and legislation are accused of not caring about women and not caring about women who are kidnapped, you know, women who are beaten up, women who are enslaved or, you know, not paid wages, women who are, you know, have their passports and other documents withheld from them so that they're, you know, rendered immobile. And I have to say that the important thing to remember when we're saying that anti-trafficking does not serve the interests of women is to remember that all of those things, you know, are already embedded within the criminal code in Canada. It's illegal to kidnap people, to beat them up, to rape them, to not pay them wages, to withhold their documents without their permission, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So the question is why people think an new legislation around anti-trafficking is somehow going to make women safer when the police seem completely disinterested in applying the criminal code measures that already exist to protect women. For instance, in sex work, we should be demanding that workers in the sex industry are protected under health and safety occupation regulations. You know, as all workers should be, we should demand that workers who are illegalized have access to the same rights and entitlements than any other worker in the country, which would, of course, mean that we need to eliminate the distinction between so-called illegals and legal workers. There's many things that we can do that do not rely upon further criminalizing the movement of people across borders. So I think that that's the challenge that we need to pose to those people who tell us that the only way to protect women, especially in the sex industry, is to go after those people who are facilitating their entry into it.
Since it's restrictive immigration policies that are causing much of the exploitation of these quote-unquote trafficked women, could you talk a little bit about, like, more generally what it would mean to fight for migrant women's safety?
Well, let me give you two examples of how anti-trafficking legislation actually furthers the vulnerability and the exploitation that many, many women migrants, in fact, do face. Anti-trafficking legislation targets people who are helping women cross borders. What that does is make the cost of moving across borders higher, so more and more women have to go further into debt in order to facilitate their movement across borders. And secondly, by imposing these enormous penalties, which in Canada can include a life sentence, in the United States can include a death sentence, by making the penalty so high to be caught facilitating the movement of people across borders without state permission, what happens is that the people who are moving people make people move in more vulnerable routes. So, people are being forced to cross borders in very, very vulnerable places like, deserts, mountains, places that we know hundreds upon hundreds of migrants' bodies are found dead every year. So anti-trafficking legislation is actually contributing to making migration less safe for women. The only way that migration is going to be safe for women and other people is to decriminalize it. We need to ensure that people have the autonomous right to move whenever they decide that that is in their own best interest. People must have the autonomous right to move. States need to be challenged in their preventing the autonomous rights to people move. if today women could be assured that when they needed to move, they could do so freely without being criminalized, without having to have forged papers, without having to get smuggled into, you know, the back of a boat or the, you know, the underbelly of a car. If we could ensure that, women would be much safer.
All right. Thanks so much.